Welcome to Blazing Grace with Jason Graves and Taff Winnick. Here you'll find no condemnation, just two guys who are willing to help you discover God's grace for your life. Let's tackle today's issues. Here's Jason and Taff.
And we're back on the Blazing Grace Show. It's Jason Graves, along with the trusted one, the brother amongst brothers, Taff Winnick.
You didn't say sidekick.
I didn't. Are you proud of me?
We're growing.
We're growing. And one thing I need to grow in is I need to correct myself from last taping or from the last show we did on physical abuse. I got some numbers mixed up, and I kind of sensed as we were typing the show that I might have been messing these numbers up. But I want to clarify some statistics around abuse from Patrick Carn's book. I don't remember what the numbers were I gave, but here's the actualities around them. 97% of sex addicts have been emotionally abused through words or actions, 81% sexually abused, and 72% physically abused or neglected. And that's actually from Patrick Carn's book, Contrary to Love. So I apologize, but we wanted to set the record straight on that just so everyone could be in the know.
That's good to know. And 93 out of 100 people, 93 out of every 100 sex addicts, that's like saying almost everyone who suffers in sexual addiction has been emotionally abused.
Well, now you're doing it because it's actually 97%. So I'm going to correct you too.
97%.
But it's, the point is it's high. It's very high. Right. And it has to do with what we're talking about today, which is emotional deprivation. So in other words, a lot of us in our journey through and around and in sexual addiction and compulsion have dealt with a deprivation around getting our emotional needs met, okay? And that can stem, that is one of the common roots of that, is emotional neglect or disconnection with one of your primary caregivers, attachment disorders with your parents in childhood. Okay, so we're going to talk about all that today and put it on the table because we know there's a lot of people out there suffering, Taff, either individually, that either they're single and they don't feel comfortable even with their own emotions, or in a marriage and not able to be open, feeling like they have to hide, feeling uncomfortable, discussing feelings and emotions in that relationship as well.
And It goes like this a lot of the time, at least in my experience of it with people. Someone would say something like, I need so much emotionally so much of the time that I really am afraid to even open that up to someone. Having suffered emotional deprivation early, and especially when it's early in life in the formative years of adolescence and even before that, in the adult life, it's experienced as really needs gone way over the top, needs gone out of control. I don't know if that's been your experience as a clinician, but I run across people that they really are afraid to tell either their family or their friends or their spouse really how deep their emotional need goes.
Right.
Because they're pretty sure that it's not going to be met.
Yeah, there's a real risk there.
Right.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it that way. I've also seen it as basically the way we look at this and what I normally refer to it in my practice or in my way of working with clients is intimacy aversion. In other words, when I've grown up with a deprivation around feelings and emotions, that manifests very often in my life as a tendency to sabotage, either intentionally or subconsciously, the intimacy in a relationship. And of course, what is one of the underpinnings of intimacy? That's feelings and emotions. So part of it too, at the root level, has to do with a fundamental misunderstanding or inability or unwillingness even to be real about our own feelings and emotions. You talk about that fear of opening up to others. Well, I mean, a lot of us fear opening up to ourselves because, like you said, we're either afraid that we're not going to be able to meet our own need or that the intensity of those feelings would just be too much to handle.
Right. And so many times that, to say what you need, I mean, think about this in the life of, say a 6 or a 7 year old person. if they have and they do have these emotional needs for comfort and for safety and for guidance and all these things, and if you grow up with you know, with parents who maybe are broken emotionally themselves, mm-hmm. and you continually have to find a way to meet your own needs, you can see how, you know, stuffing down how much you really needed and didn't get, you stuff that down somewhere, mm-hmm. to where you're always having to fend for yourself. And it shows up in the adult life like a real fear, mm-hmm. of the possibility of someone meeting your needs. That's that intimacy aversion you were talking about, where mm-hmm. someone comes and really meets you emotionally,
yeah.
and you almost recoil from that, mm-hmm. because it brings up how much you might really need it and you've learned not to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could be a real scary thing when you've gotten the message growing up that the people who are your primary caregivers or your primary relationships, your key developmental people like your parents, your peers, your siblings, or your extended family, the adults therein, or even primary figures like your teachers, your school teachers. When those people aren't able to, because of their own brokenness, handle you and your feelings, if they're not able to meet your needs and they're sending those messages, then how are you ever going to expect that your spouse is going to be able to do that, or that your friends are going to be able to do that? So, you know, you're at a disadvantage, you know. And I know that even though for me, I in my story, I don't necessarily relate with emotional deprivation in terms of how I live my life, or necessarily how I grew up. I don't relate with intimacy aversion. I don't feel like I'm one that sabotages the intimacy much. I mean, I think we all do it to some extent, but I don't know that I would say that's one of my significant factors. I still notice when I am withdrawing emotionally in the relationship, when I am afraid and withholding something that could be shared. And sometimes that's because, you know, my wife's not perfect. She's pretty emotionally stable and very healthy, but she's not perfect. And so sometimes it's a perception thing, or sometimes I just don't have it in mind the right way to ask. You know, like it'd be easy to just say, honey, I have something really powerful I want to share with you, but I'm really vulnerable about it. Could you give me some gentleness and space on this while I share it? Sometimes it's as easy as
just asking. And say something very
asking.
Affirming and complimentary right when I get done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
But we don't say that.
We forget. Or we just don't know. Or we don't have permission to ask those things. It's okay to ask for what you need. I mean, a person that struggles with living in emotional deprivation and sabotaging the intimacy in relationships often has trouble expressing their wants and needs. You know, basic things. You know, and so...
I was going to say, Jason, that's the antidote for, I mean, and this is a really quick show. This could be a 2-hour talk very easily. Mm-hmm. This is much, I understand it's a lot more complicated maybe than we'll be able to describe here,
right.
In our little segment. But mm-hmm. for someone who's gone through that, you were emotionally deprived when you were younger, and you've learned to meet your own needs, and that people aren't really good at meeting your needs. You develop this aversion. Here's the antidote, is that you have to risk needing.
Right.
I remember, you know, because this, and this makes you, you know, such an excellent friend and brother to me, Jason, because I remember having this conversation with you about my own life. Mm-hmm. And I remember you just kind of smiled and said, well, it's something like, well, you just haven't felt like it's safe to need something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you really called me out on that.
Yeah, I emotionally kicked your butt that day, didn't I?
Well, if you want to say it that way.
I do.
Yeah.
I want to say it that way.
He wanted to say it that way.
Well, sometimes we need
but
an
so
emotional
great.
Butt kick.
Absolutely. You know, I won't trust a guy who won't do that.
Right. Good point.
But very, very valuable and very risky. Mm-hmm. For you listening, if you are trying to get your mind around actually needing something out loud from friends and spouses and family members, people in your life whom you've never been able to communicate your needs to, mm-hmm. this is the risk. The risk is the antidote for this.
It's good.
It's not that you'll never be hurt again.
Right. We have to be willing to risk our hearts in order to be able to know our hearts and to be able to share our hearts. Would you say that's fair?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, okay. So how do I know if I'm a person that experienced emotional deprivation growing up, or is a person who's living in intimacy aversion here today? Well, I'm going to go in just a second over a little assessment there that you can kind of check in on. But first, of course, if you're just tuning in, this is the show on emotional deprivation. And a couple of quick announcements here. Upcoming events. Well, first of all, we've got the Love One Out Ministers Leaders Training in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'll be there on January 13th. For more information, go to loveoneout.com. That's love, W-O-N, out.com. A couple of things to be aware of. You know, TAF does intensives all over the country. If you listened to the last show, we talked about how he'll fly to you. So that's a pretty cool service you got, TAF. And I know that you can do that for individuals and married couples, right?
Individuals and married couples. Mm-hmm. It's a two-day intensive. Mm-hmm. And
But done over the weekend, right?
Done over a mm-hmm. weekend. Mm-hmm. And it really is for, you know, sometimes you run into a place where you realize you need an emergency reset.
Right.
Things are really not going well, and you need some – it's really an intervention kind of thing.
Right, bingo.
To turn the corner.
They don't call it an intensive for nothing. So
yeah, you will definitely feel it.
For information on that or for TAF's teleconference men's groups, call them at 877-223-7331. Or, of course, you can email help@legendcounseling.com. By the way, save the date. Our retreat, which TAF and I will both be at here this spring, is going to be May 1st through the 3rd in Colorado. In fact, it's near beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. So save the date on that. Stay tuned for more information. We're working on the brochure as we speak here. But I want to get back to emotional deprivation. And let's go over this little survey here. And you can just listen and answer true or false to these and keep track, maybe count on one hand or the other, how many you can say true to. Say true if this is either true of your life growing up and what you witnessed in your parents' child rearing skills or their relationship, or if you see this in your own life today, or if your spouse would say it's true of you. Number one, withholding love from the other spouse at times. Do you do that? Withholding praise, number two, or appreciation. Number three, controlling, either with silent treatment, anger, or both. Some would call that stonewalling. Number four, ongoing or ungrounded criticism. Number five, withholding sex or simply not initiating. Number six, unwilling or unable to discuss feelings or emotions with your spouse. So sort of hiding emotionally. Number seven, staying so busy that there is little or no relational time, or sort of avoiding the other person. Number eight, making problems or issues about the spouse instead of owning your responsibility. Or number nine, controlling or shaming about money issues. Okay, now that's a simple assessment called the Intimacy Aversion Screening Test. You can actually look that up online. Go to healingforthesoul.org, click the resources tab, and I believe that's on the documents page. But if you answered five true or more on that, then it's something that's really good to be able to look at. This is a these are all patterns of destroying or sabotaging or eroding the intimacy in a relationship. Okay.
Yeah, staying away from that vulnerable place where you can, you know, where someone might need to meet your needs, or mm-hmm. where you might need to open up, mm-hmm. Open that up to someone.
Which is the risk that we're talking about, okay? So it is a risky thing to love another person. It is a risky thing to give them praise or appreciation. It's risky to, you know, express your anger in healthy ways rather than trying to control the other person. To just settle for criticizing them rather than offering. I love how my wife says, "Can I give you a gift?" In other words, I see something that you don't see, and I'm offering it to you so that you can do what you want with it, not so that I can control you or criticize you or make it seem like I'm picking on you. It's risky to initiate sex. I mean, we could talk about doing a whole show on that right there, because that's a problem. There's a lot of marriages out there that, you know, the couple just isn't having sex much. You know, it's because either there's fear of initiating that, fear of rejection, all sorts of issues. It's a risky thing to express your feelings and emotions. I mean, that's something that I don't know about you, Tap, but I find myself working with couples on in sessions a lot. It's just, I feel blank when blank.
When you say this to me, it makes me feel fill in the blank. Yeah, that's that is a difficult place. And I was sitting here thinking, you know, the show being on emotional deprivation, we get that. That gets, whatever season of life we're talking about, that gets handed to us by self-absorbed people.
Right.
Whether it's parents, a brother, a sister, a family, friends, whatever, a spouse maybe that's self-absorbed, or maybe a previous marriage where, you know, you were really, you had to be close to someone who was really self-absorbed, and that creates just this vacuum of emotional connection and exchange in your life.
It's like you can't give what you don't have, what you can't offer, or you don't know how to share. And so when you're self-absorbed and you're in that place, how can you pass it along, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And this is the irony of it. And I'm gonna try this statement out, and I want you to tell me what you think here. Mm-hmm. The more we react to self-absorption in other people, the more self-absorbed we become.
Ooh, wow!
Because that's the soul's reaction. Mm-hmm. It creates such a need, such a deficit, such an empty hole of emotionality.
Yeah.
If you're around that too long, and you don't have good boundaries, and it damages you emotionally, the reaction to the damage is always some version of self-absorption.
That's good. Say that again. The more we react
to the self-absorbed, the more we develop a lifestyle of reacting to the self-absorbed people in our life, the more self-absorbed we become.
I like that, because when we choose to react in response to somebody else's brokenness and pain, whether that's self-absorbed nature or otherwise, essentially, we're letting them set the terms, and we're operating within the paradigm that they're offering. Opposed to when we choose to respond according to truth and out of a sense of love, responses are very different from reactions. When we respond, we either set our terms ourselves, or we set the terms that maybe it's fair to say God would have us set. And we are exchanging that paradigm that's being foisted on us for something different and something healthy.
Yeah, and speaking of healthy, I mean, it really does, you know, to prevent damage. If you find yourself in a relationship right now with someone who's self-absorbed, it's very painful. It's very lonely. But boundaries are a big part of that health. It's what we don't normally have when we're kids, and so we're just steamrolled, you know, if we had self-absorbed parents.
Right.
But developing good boundaries with that, loving the self-absorbed person might be, there's a show topic
for
you.
There we go.
You know, because it's so difficult. What do you give the person who thinks they deserve everything?
Right. Yeah. A little spin on a holiday theme there, huh?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Good. Well, yeah, maybe we will do that on a show down the road. But of course, we are listener supported, folks. So we want to hear, what are your ideas? I mean, do you want us to do a show on self-absorption? Let us know. I know you're probably, some of you listening at the computer right now, okay, jump off of the page that you're currently on, go back to your email, send us an email, and let us know what do you want to hear about? What things do you want discussed? You can email Taff. That's help@legendcounseling.com, or me at help@healingforthesoul.org. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, if you don't want to financially support us, you can do that too. So just get in touch with us for more information on that, because we want to partner with you. We want to do this together, and we do need your help. All right. It takes dollars to stay in the studio and to keep the program out there. So can you help us? We'd love it. Getting back, though, to emotional deprivation, how would a person recognize that maybe they are reacting rather than responding? Maybe you can relate with the intimacy aversion screening test on many of those. I mean, you're like, goodness gracious, were you just, you know, basing that test on my life? Are there spy cameras on me? And because I can relate to all of those. I've had guys, Taff, raise their hand to all nine of those before, 9 out of 9.
Yeah,
okay?
Absolutely.
There's a special prize for folks that are dealing with
you
9 out of
9. You get the
9 out of
9. Right.
Yes, you get the 9 out of 9 prize. What if you are relating at a high level to those things? What if you suspect you might be reacting more than responding in instances where you're experiencing emotional deprivation in a relationship? How would you know that? And, you know, what can you do about it?
I was just thinking, if we're protecting ourselves, which is what you do if you've experienced too much emotional deprivation in your life, that's a very self-protective style of relating. Mm-hmm. And here's a good litmus test for that. Someone brings you an emotional need. Someone close in your life brings you an emotional need. And immediately you're thinking about how what they're saying affects you rather than what they're actually experiencing.
Hmm.
That is a hallmark of having this reactive style. Someone comes to you with a need. They say, hey, I'm really missing this. And, you know, it really would be helpful if, and immediately if you're reacting and you step out of how they might be experiencing that,
mm-hmm.
we're not free to love if we're self-protecting.
Right.
If someone else's need threatens us, that's an easier way to say this.
Yeah.
If someone bringing a need to you feels threatening to you, then that's a good way to know that you've kind of adopted a reactive style to the way that you relate to people.
Yeah. Talk about what you were saying earlier. I mean, that's exactly the picture of it, you know. The more we react to another person's self-absorption, the more self-absorbed, or you could even say self-obsessed, we become. Okay, that's good. Powerful. If you didn't get anything else today, guys, you got that. That's good. That's good stuff. Now, listen, we need to wrap up here. But we appreciate you tuning in so much. I hope and trust that you got something out of today. And we will certainly look forward to connecting with you next time, when we will be talking about, as our amazing producer has suggested, the topic of accountability partners. And boy, the ins and outs of that is a big maze to navigate. But we want to equip you to know how to select the best accountability partners, what to look for, what to stay away from, and to really make sure that you are getting plugged in a way that's going to prove effective for you.
And how to do that well in the lives of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Amen. Good. So not only getting it, but giving it. All right. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening. Blazing Grace is a listener-supported program, and your prayers and financial contributions are greatly appreciated. For more information on the issues discussed in today's program, or to make a tax-deductible donation, go to healingforthesoul.org. We appreciate you listening and hope you join us next time for Blazing Grace.